Osiris.
Coming at you May 3rd, 2024. It's the inaugural record release from Discograffiti. Metal Machine Muzak is a slanted tribute to Lou Reed's divisive 1975 double LP Metal Machine Music. Lester Bangs called it the greatest album ever made, but no matter how it hits you, it's always been the ultimate music freak secret handshake. My ambient reimagining features four 16-minute, one-second tracks, just like the original, and each one was created by a top-shelf indie rock visionary. Lou Barlow from Dinosaur Jr. and Sebado, Corey Hansen from Wand, W. Cullen Hart from the Olivia Tremor Control, and Mark Robinson from Unrest. That's right, not a slouch in the bunch, unlike 99% of the compilations you've ever begrudgingly purchased for the one and only band on it you just had to hear. Metal Machine Muzak won't be available on streaming. The digital drops on May 3rd. The vinyl will be shipped this summer, and we're taking pre-orders for both right now. The LPs are going fast. They're being produced in a very limited edition run of 300 numbered 180-gram color vinyl double LP gatefold copies, only 100 of which can be ordered online. These copies will be numbered from 1 to 100, and they're first come, first served. To order, just go to patreon.com/discograffiti, then head into our shop. Again, that's patreon.com/discograffiti. Don't miss out on Metal Machine Muzak, the ambient experience designed to make Brian Eno run screaming. Welcome to Discograffiti, the music obsessives podcast that gives freaks like you and me the chance to connect with a brotherhood obsessed with rating the entire discography of every single artist and band that ever mattered. I'm your host, Dave Gebro, and with 3 to 4 episodes each week, you're going to gain a comprehensive knowledge of an act's history and output in the time it takes to listen to one album. Each new guest swings a hard left into an area you either had no idea you needed to know about or know all about and can't believe you're not alone out there. I am thrilled to announce that we have partnered with the podcast network Osiris Media, the leading storyteller in music. You can check out all their music podcasts at osirispod.com. Here we are, finally. It's Discograffiti's Metal Machine Muzak release week. Ergo, in this episode, we'll be turning our spray cans on ourselves. Along with our special guest, Lou Barlow of Sebado, Dinosaur Jr., and the Folk Implosion, one of the exalted contributors to Discograffiti's Metal Machine Muzak double tribute LP. This is a very special week here at the show because Robinson, Hart, Hansen, and Barlow have taken the time to detail the approaches they took to each of their 16-minute Metal Machine Muzak pieces. The full lineup's as follows: Lou Barlow on Friday, May 3rd, Corey Hansen from Wand on Sunday, May 5th, Unrest's Mark Robinson on Tuesday, May 7th, and the Olivia Tremor Control's W. Cullen Hart on Wednesday, May 8th. To order Metal Machine Muzak, just head over to patreon.com/discograffiti/shop, or just click either of the links right there in the show notes. But whatever you do, make sure you order it, because it'll blow your effing mind, and it's for a good cause, because it'll help keep this show afloat. Just try to imagine a world without Discograffiti. Yeah, I know, it stinks. And while you're up there ordering on Discograffiti's Patreon, feel free to subscribe as well for the complete versions of all our shows, plus a massive barrage of over 150 extra episodes. Even if you're on the fence, you might as well, because it's completely free to become a basic member. And away we go then with Lou Barlow. All right. We're here with the inventor of the Tascam 4-track at Psychiatrist's Couch, Louis Barlow, a.k.a. Lou B., a.k.a. Loser Lubicore. I just realized within the last couple days that loser, is that a play on Lou? Or is nothing?
It can be. Obviously, it can be. Yeah. I don't think I did it initially because it was related. I think I did it initially because I was kind of coming out of hardcore like this, and hardcore was becoming more and more victorious sounding. I don't know. There was a thing like Minor Threat and then the Straight Edge, like in this, and hardcore became more like, you know, like galloping. And then people started playing speed metal and it was like, and I really felt from the music I was listening to too, I went darker and I just thought that, yeah, loser. It's like, fuck it. Like, let's sell. I mean, like, down. This is where it's like, I can't pretend. It's like, let's talk about what's happening.
I mean, my initial swell of ambition in my early 20s, I don't know what it was about it. The Losing Losers and, you know, the compilation with Drag Down Memory in high school. And
yeah, yeah.
I mean, I connected so hard with all that. I know we talked about it,
yeah,
ad nauseum, but it's almost something that I can't put into words because I don't see myself as a loser, and I'm endlessly ambitious. But at root, I always connected to what you were putting out there as far as that goes. And you too, you're no fucking slouch in the activity department.
No, and I felt very strongly that the music that I was making was like important and like, you know, and actually victorious. It felt really like, you know, at the core of it, I don't know if positivity is the right thing to describe, but definitely like, I don't know. I was just very involved in what I was doing and felt very
cathartic.
I guess that would be it. I think like trying to ascribe any kind of like good, bad thing to it, I don't really know if I can, but cathartic is about it. It's like, it felt necessary to me. And I really, really, really enjoyed it. I just really loved recording and listening back to it and thinking about people listening to it and giving it to people because I knew that it wasn't really like typical. I knew that I was just reaching out, you know, and I really, really enjoyed that part of it.
You know, it's not a thing of like your early work is your best work. It's just the intimacy in that. If one was to keep that up forever, A, you'd risk being a Jandek type, Moondog type dude.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. It's like I wanted to actually have a life, and the music that I was making and the emotional demands of that music, like if I was to pursue that, I just knew that I couldn't become a functional adult, I guess. I do it at my core, really want to be functional, and I want to live life, and I want to have kids, and I want to go pick them up at school. And you know, you do have to make that decision, like when you have something, I think that's so, because what I was doing initially was so involved and so meticulous and so emotionally, I mean, so like self-focused too, you know, I think I made the decision to go out, to move outward. In some ways, when I do listen to that early stuff, I mean, I do hear something. I'm like, God, if that's all I did, if I just never sat down, if I never put my ukulele down and never stopped recording on a four track, I would be playing in theaters now. I would be this weird dude that they would be shuttled between places, and it would have been a better career solution. It's much like when I realized early on when Dinosaur Jr. were playing, we played with a band called Uniform Choice in like 1986. And I realized at that point, it was like, if you really want to make a living and you really want to make music and make a bunch of fucking money, stick with hardcore. But we didn't. We didn't stick with hardcore. We had to move on. We had to move to something else, you know, and people of our vintage that have stuck to hardcore it's a pretty good retirement program. It's like, you know, there's not many of us really, but hardcore had to move on, and you move on because you want to grow personally. And it doesn't make for the most consistent discography, but it does make for a better life.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, it's not like you started only looking outward and writing political songs, but it was just that excoriating self-examination. You know, they say,
oh, no. Look, I'm a music fan. I'm a music fan. I'm very particular. I totally understand. Like, as a music fan, it helps me tremendously when I look at my own catalog or when I get into a mood where I'm just like, how come people didn't, why don't they like, you know, when I get into that sort of thing, it's like, I just remember, like, I'm a music fan. I'm a music fan who, I mean, I'm so passionate about certain things. You know, I mean, I'm really currently rediscovering my obsession with this band Moonshake that were from the 90s. I absolutely fucking love them. I mean, I think their first three records are like true. I mean, it frustrates me that people don't understand how great this band is. But did I listen to their last three albums that they did? Like, no, I didn't, because the band changed. You know, and I didn't like the way they changed. So I get it. I totally get it. And this is for me. My discography is for me. This is about me and whether anybody, whatever particular angle you, I mean, I'm just hoping someone takes some angle. It's just there.
Well, that's what my show is like the armchair critic, like, you know, how yeah. the fat assholes who sit around and critique.
I love it.
Players. You know, it's like you're so fat, you can't even get off the couch and you're telling the quarterback how to throw the ball.
Exactly. I love it.
Yeah. And so in a sense, I like to see myself as a more informed version of Chris Farley interviewing Paul McCartney.
Yeah. I like it. It's a good angle.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I'm trying to explain to the association, you know, why this record of theirs sucks. You know, just things like that. But I figure if I come at it conceptually, like it's thought through, then they won't be put off by it or insulted. But, you know, real music obsessives, as you know, because you're one, that's how they talk behind closed doors. So do you see yourself more as a musician, or are you trying to become a podcaster and trying to make that supersede your day job now? What are your plans with Raw Impressions? I mean, is this like, and I know you started a Substack, so I'm curious, is the idea to turn the Lou brand into a cottage industry so you could stop being away from home?
It's like you got to figure out parallel stuff, man. Everything moves and everything is like, and I got the kids are getting older and more expensive. It's like, you have to figure out, you got to hustle. This guy, Dimitri from Off, he plays an Off. He had a band called The Burning Brides. He's a guitar player. I mean, I was at Chuck E. Cheese once. It was Dale Crover's kid's birthday party. I'm a Chuck E. Cheese. Dimitri is like leaping around with a camera and taking pictures. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, it's a hustle, man. Life's a hustle. And I was like, whoa. So, I mean, and like when you meet musicians in LA, they understand it. They just understand that like you have to fucking move. You cannot stop moving. It's like, it's not, you can certainly stop moving. And I stop moving all the time. But I think the thing that I appreciated about that kind of thing is that it's like you have your music, you know, and back in the day, it was like, here's my music, you know, bleh, here's the album that took me 2 years to make and blah, that's all I have to say. It's not like that anymore. You kind of have to like move, duck, you know, you're a creative person. Generally, if you're a musician, you also are creative in other ways. So I think it's very natural for people to open up and just create in other ways. So that's part of it. But yes, of course.
I mean, do you get the ultimate fulfillment now doing the show with your wife?
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it's amazing. Well, that's yeah. I've always been trying to integrate everybody in my life into the process. Just even with Sebado and like after I got out of, I'm just like, everybody, let's all get in on it. Everybody, you know, when we did the bake sale LP, Sebado bake sale LP, like Jason's girlfriend played drums on four of his songs and Bob Faye's girlfriend sang. I mean, like, I just wanted everybody to get and all of us produce and all of us together. I've been kind of striving for that kind of like, it's kind of it's sort of the hippie in me, I guess, you know, the thing that I did take away from growing up listening to, you know, in the 60s, of the late 60s and I and the Beatles, for lack of, I mean, just you make it inclusive. You make everybody, every little thing is part of your creative life. You have your songs, but then there's also all of these other things. And I think that the podcast culture is uniquely positioned and is a unique opportunity for people to become even more creative. If you already have a lot to say, if you already, it's like, I want it to just be a thing that I do. I don't know what it would be. I don't know what I have no goal. I know that already it's basically just softened the ground for me. Like I played in Australia recently to like 3 or 4 times more people than I've ever played to in Australia. I don't know why. I'm just saying that it's like all softening the ground. And I don't know if people are interested. There's stuff here for them. I have things that I've done and they're here. And my wife is awesome. And she's really, her voice is wonderful. She was kind of born to be on a mic or a camera or something. She just is. That's part of her personality. She's a creative person. So I don't know what, there is no goal, man. It's like you asked me early on, you're like, well, what's the podcast about? And I'm like, I don't fucking know. It's like, well, what are you going to do? So you record the whole thing on 4-track? I'm like, no, I record part of it on 4-track. You know, I'm using tapes and all of my things and all of these sources, these media sources to drag things, textures. I want the podcast to be sort of like a textured, almost like a radio show. You know, where there's different things popping in, like voices and bumpers and commercials. And it's not quite that frenetic. I'd love it to be even more frenetic, but that's what I'm moving towards, is making it more and more just like this little like poof, this burst of information and texture, you know. And
it's been cool watching you not just do it, but stick with it, because you never know if somebody, because there's so many podcasts now, you never know if somebody is going to be like, oh, that would be neat, and then realize how much work actually
it's
a lark, and it's not a lark. It may start a lark, but that's why the whole area is turning into a mass graveyard, because shows start and stop all the time.
No, I want it to be, and it is, a daily part of my creative life, because it is so open. It's so, for instance, when I was working on the piece for you, you know, I'm working on a 16-minute piece, and I thought, my first thought was that, like, I'd done a jam with my son. He's like, he was 13 at the time and was poking at my synthesizers. He listens to a lot of, like, sort of this really kind of out there, but it's, I think it's enormously popular rap, you know, which has a lot of like bleeps and bloops in it. And he seemed to be really interested in music with synthesizers and realized that I had a bunch of them. So we sat down and did, like, him on one channel and me on the other. And we did dueling synthesizers for a couple of nights, like about a year ago, you know, with him like hitting sequencer things and us both like, and me working off of him and my little girl coming in and picking up the microphone. And I realized that whatever I did for you, I wanted the basis of it to be in this play that I had. And then this actually fits the Raw Impressions thing, because a lot of what actually not just Raw Impressions, but what I've been doing from the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, which is going through all of these cassettes, going through my life, you know, just basically almost just going through methodically listening to all of these cassettes that I have and that I've created up until this point, which is like a fair amount of years, you know, and I did so much. And when I lost the cassette, like as a real medium for me, it actually really, something about it, like really subtracted a certain on the moment thing. Cause I had cassettes. I mean, I was just, I think that's coming back, but that in combination with, like, now that with iPhones, with digital memos and things, I have so many things that I've done to draw upon. So with your thing, I thought at first I wanted to create the basis of it based on these little jams that I was having with my son. And then second, I was going to go back and find all of the, like, find as many drones that I made over the years as possible. So I did that. And then I kind of stumbled upon all these different iterations of show tapes that I had made, because I had made a Sebado show tape that I perfected and released. I mean, it eventually was released.
It's at the end of the Soul and Fire sale.
Yes, there's a big, I don't know how long it is, maybe 13 minutes, but...
Yeah, it's, I mean, I've heard it a million times. I used to play it for enjoyment all the time.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Like, that was kind of my pinnacle. Like, when I did the show tape and then I really edited it, and I've always loved collages, you know, and it's an interesting thing with collages and, like, work with noise and electronic music. It's like there's such a, I don't want to say pretentious element to it, but I'm just saying there's an element to it that I don't understand. It's like jazz. When I hear jazz, it makes me want to make music. I don't want to listen to it. I want to do it. So, and, like, instrumental music is the same way. It's, or, like, instrumental and experimental music is the same. It's like, I don't want to listen. I want to do it. I just immediately want to grab things and start jabbing at things. And that's what I want to do. So it was kind of amazing. Your proposal for this project came to me at a point where I was like, now that I've gone through so many of these tapes and things for Raw Impressions and for other things that I'm trying to release, like archival shit, like, I want to take all of these disparate things that I didn't use necessarily, and then start to combine them and blindly combine them and just see what happens. So I did that. I started doing that a while ago. I worked on the piece for this. Like, I worked on that for like a lot. All I can say is a lot. I've been working.
I can tell. And I got to ask, so you told me that it was an area that you were looking to get into, these longer soundscapes. How long had you been thinking about doing something like that? And were you doing stuff like that before I even came to you with this?
Well, I mean, I did things like this up until the mid-2000s in general. I was still generating. And then when I started to do the podcast, I was like, okay, I started to generate, because I'm podcasts are all created, like the ones that I really dig into, I create them as like sessions, like audio sessions, like as if I was recording a song, you know, and tracks. And then I record bumper things that I interact with my wife, because we go into a session, I create a long session, and then plug my wife and I into it. And then she reacts to the elements that I've put into it, which I find endlessly entertaining, because she's such a wonderful, on the moment, you know, emotionally intelligent and really funny person. So I like to create these little environments that she then enters as a listener and as a vocalist, basically, as someone speaking. And then those little bits that I put in, she interacts with it and we both interact with it. And then after we've done that, I'll go back in and then add things to that. So the podcast had reintroduced the collage aspect, but I was really wanting, and this goes back to the stuff that you connected to, like the Weed Foreston record, and then also the Dinosaur Jr. record. There's a piece called Polito that I did on that, which is like this total tape mind fuck, you know, just when I was a kid and like doing heavy psychedelics and just really digging into it.
That was the beginning, wasn't it?
Was the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, in the mid-80s, I had really discovered, it was when I just really had dug into so much incredibly inspiring music, you know, hardcore and then industrial music, Throbbing Gristle. And then when Sonic Youth came out, like they did the Bad Moon Rising record, which was seemed largely influenced by tapes that they were playing, or they were incorporating tapes into what they were doing. Mission of Burma and were incorporating tapes into what they did.
Bad Moon Rising samples Metal Machine music.
It does. Yeah, that's perfect. Right. And then I was also, of course, discovering the Velvet Underground and then Metal Machine music for like also, you know, I managed to find that somewhere. And there was a band called SPK from Australia. I mean, just there was so much, like, you know, industrial was a real big thing. So it's not surprising to me that when you got the piece, you were like, well, it's dark. And I was like, is it dark? And I'm like, oh, I guess it is. I guess it is, because there's a piece called Slogan by SPK from Australia, the Surgical Penis Clinic. And they put out a 7-inch with this song called Slogan. And it's not a song, it's just this fucking like crazy aggressive tape collage that's just like this, just this rolling ball of just. And then there's also this band on Ralph Records called Ronaldo and the Loaf. They did an album called Songs for Singing Larvae. And I don't know if they were members of the Residents, but they were Residents adjacent. And they put out that record, like, I think it was like 82 or 83. And that as well is just like these rolling tape collage, you know, with home recorded. The point is that there's so many things that I aspire to that have inspired me. And when you gave me, we were like, I just need 16 minutes of whatever the fuck you want to give me. I'm like, okay. I wanted, because I did spend the most of my middle of my life as a musician being a songwriter and really focusing on songwriting. But there's this whole other aspect that I really get off on, just random shit, random scary shit.
It is scary. and that wasn't the only takeaway, was holy shit, that's terrifying. But I didn't know what to expect. The interesting thing about, you know, calling it an ambient reimagining is that for some people, two of the four people who worked on this use Metal Machine music as ambience to relax. So, for example, Corey Hansen's piece is very similar to Metal Machine music. It's amazing. Will Hart, too. Will Cullen Hart. He would kill me if he heard me say the two-word version of his name. You know, he relaxes to Metal Machine music. And I guess from the outset, you know, this is an idea that I've had for many years, but I didn't have a podcast at the time. And I thought it would be really cool. I think initially I was thinking more straight ambient, almost like George Winston, like it would be a funny circular thing to do. But then it became much more interesting to have people's subjective idea of what that meant. But why did you do it? I mean, obviously we had great conversations, and I want to throw this out there that fucking Bob Nastanovich, something he said to me, which stuck with me, was, how did you trick these people into doing it? And I was like, immediately was pissed at him for phrasing it like that, because I thought, hey, this is a really cool project. But yeah, I mean, you know, I've already had tons of fawning adulation sycophantically going in your direction. So I'm curious what kind of connection beyond just, hey, give me 16 minutes of stuff that you felt with me and or Disco Graffiti, where your gut said, you know what, let's fucking do this thing.
Well, because you like my early stuff. Because you had an interest in the rawest version of me. So I was like, I'm going to present whatever I do. I'm going to present something that I want to scare myself with this. And the wonderful thing about it not being songs or songwriting is I do have a sense of melody about what I put in the, that's the beautiful thing about where we're at. The wonderful thing too now is that technology has made it possible for me to indulge all kinds of things that I would have not been able to indulge earlier, because it would have taken so much time. It would have taken so much time to what digital gives you as far as collages go and as far as experimentation, and you combine analog with digital, before trying to do anything like this, analog would have taken even longer than it took me. It would have taken probably, I'm kind of not joking when I say it would have taken me 5 months. So I could envision things. I could sit, I just made it something that I thought about. But basically I'm saying that for your thing, I knew that I could have gotten away with just be like, oh, that's a nice sound, I'll leave it there for a second. I have all kinds of sounds like that I could be like, that sounds really pleasing. But I'm like, I don't want that. Like, I want to represent, because Lou Reed, that record, the thing is, and I was rereading the liner notes. I was cleaning my attic yesterday and came upon my copy of it, funny enough, you know. But what I always really liked about the liner notes was that it's like, this is my rock and roll. That was his point. It was like his thing was like, this is it. This is what's really going on with me. And how he equates it in the liner notes to, fucking doo-wop that he was listening to. He's equating it to his own rich relationship to music, because that's the thing that I love about Lou Reed so much, is that he synthesized all of these influences into something really... talk about raw, he really introduced raw to a lot of people, myself included. So I just felt like I would pursue it. Like, if this is going to be what's going on in my mind, that's what it's, because you left it open, because to me, Metal Machine Music is just, that's a blip from Lou Reed in his life.
Right.
The music itself is like, look, I'm not listening to that. Like, my go to sleep chaos record was Twin Infinitives by Royal Trucks. Like, that was the thing that calmed me down, because that's a crazy soupy. That calmed me down. Metal Machine Music was like, that's cool, but I didn't connect with it on that kind of a level. I appreciated it in terms of Lou Reed's discography. And yes, but I was like, I didn't naturally leap upon it as like, this is the sound of, because I'd already, by the time I heard Metal Machine Music, I had heard Einstein, Sturzen, and Neubauten. I had heard all this other crazy shit. I'd heard all of the sort of different versions that people had done and all of the things that had come after that.
You didn't feel stringently hemmed in by the idea of being informed by the actual Metal Machine Music, but more as a conceptual leap off point based on the...
Yeah, absolutely. And based on what I knew Lou Reed himself, if I can presume that, because I said, those liner notes, those are something that have always echoed in my brain from the first time that I was like, that's cool. He was like, I'm not fucking writing songs now. Fuck this. I want to make this shit that just pleases me, that I can do whatever I want. And I'm like, that's what I did, is like, I don't have to worry about verse chorus. I don't have to worry about whether the beat fits the fucking thing. The whole thing is about, it's just creating something that's like a stream of consciousness that actually sort of recreates my own, that is where I'm at right now.
Yours is the only one that I didn't hear first. In other words, somebody else heard it before me. There's a guy that's helping me out, and he's putting together like a 2-minute conceptual video using all the pieces. So I immediately sent it to him and to my friend Joe to master, because he pre-mastered everybody else's and left a hole. And I was like, should I ask Lou if it's aggressive or mellow? Or he's like, it's all right, we'll just figure it out. But I was at lunch with my wife. This guy, his name's Rudy Fishman. He was sending me an unending volley of texts. His reaction to what you did, and he's an unflappable guy. He had brain cancer. And so it takes a lot to get him super excited. Mm-hmm. I could read you. The first thing that he wrote was, there are so many layers. It was almost like psychedelics had just kicked in when he was listening to it. And he wrote, it's everything you want it to be. And then he wrote back again, I actually wish it was longer. And then he wrote, I've listened to Barlow's thing 3 times straight. Feels different each time to me. He loves it. And he wants you to know, just as a fan of your work, he's truly blown away by it. Yeah. So did you have an initial conceptual approach, or did you just start throwing pasta at the walls?
I don't, like I said, I just wanted some of these jams that I was doing with my son because they were funny. just him grabbing and just twisting the knobs of the synthesizer and me responding to it with another synthesizer. I was like, it seems like a good place to start. And he had this brief moment where he was like I told you, he was sort of obsessed with synthesizers and making stuff. And there were just moments of that, that when we were doing it, that were so, it was just kind of fun to me and whimsical. And I thought that, yeah, I thought at first I was like, oh, that'll be the whole piece. It could be just like, just a part of the thing that he and I did. And then when I started to extract things and really think about it, then I'm like, I'm not happy just pressing a button, having something repeat until the end. I'm like, I can't do that. It's like, and then you said it was on vinyl. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, I mean, I do this with everything that I'm generally asked to do. It's like, I'm really averse to tossing things off. Not because it's like, I want to give, it's more of a personal thing. It's more just like, I want to know that every time I give something, if somebody asks me to do something, I want to do the best that I can. And I want to do it to the truest that I can. It's like, I don't, you know, that's always been a thing for me. It's like, as tossed off as my shit can sound, and it certainly does, but which I'm thankful for. I love tossed off shit, and I love the shit that I've done that's tossed off. I love that. I'm not talking about like trying to like keep a tight grip on something, but I knew that if I was given 16 minutes and could do absolutely anything within it, I'm like, okay, well, that means that just because I haven't done a collage in a long time, and because how important they are to me, and how these collages that I have done have like marked my life in certain ways. And there's not many times that I've done it. And this actually made me think like, I should be working on a collage at all times, like at all times. Like I should be like gently in the background creating this stream that will like, you know, that I periodically like, okay, there it is, you know. And just let that speak, because this particular stream, this what I did for you, is like, it's actually, it was such a heavy experience. I was drawing upon elements from, I mean, the very base, there's a thing that goes da 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 da, like through it, the whole thing. I did that when I was in high school.
Oh, really? Wow.
And my initial idea was to take that that bit, and this is something that I had recorded on cassette and then played it through the stereo and then played it again and did this really crude multi-track thing, but it was just this short, like, da 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 da. I was like, that's really cool. Maybe I should base the whole thing off of that. And then I started the process of doing that. Luckily, it kind of never went away as something that, and then I changed the pitch. I pitched it down. I fucked with everything. And then I had one other piece that I had done. So that's from like 1983, 1982. And then there was another piece that,
I'm going to guess is like the same year you did that version of Yellow Submarine on Friedman.
Yes, exactly. It's like really early Friedman stuff. And so from the beginning of my real, you know, pre-drugs too, like pre just really just the excitement of recording my own things and not really knowing what it was or what it was going to be. And then the other thing that I sort of alternate between is this sample that I had made. Acebedo were recording Harmacy, the record Harmacy, which was a very protracted, very fraught process. It was like, we were going to deliver this big record for Sub Pop, and there was so much anxiety behind it. And I was sort of entering sort of a dark period of my life at that point too. But we were recording at this studio, Dreamland, which is, it's near Woodstock, or it's Hurley, I can't remember, but it's a big studio. The Feelies had recorded a few records there. Dinosaur Jr. recorded a lot of the Where You Been record there as well. So it's this big studio. It's built in a church. There's this big room, and it's got pianos and all these things around. And to blow off steam in between, like making these, like, here we go, here's, you know, making these like, you know, very structured album. And we would just wander around this room and just pluck away at instruments and record things, you know. And I captured something. I don't even know exactly what the root is, but I do know it was recorded at Dreamland. There was just like someone was playing piano, someone was playing like an organ, and I think I was just playing like really dubby bass, like I was playing that as Bob and Jason we're just like having this free moment, like where we're just like, okay. And I made this really cool sample of it, and I've always loved it. And I used it for a secondary Sebado show tape that I never put out, it was just sort of this thing that, anyway, it was the second show tape. It was a flop, I would say, because I did the second Sebado show tape. I played it during shows. No one heard it. It didn't matter. But I did have this one rolling, this rolling loop that I really liked. And I'm like, well, I could base it off of that and then link the early thing to that. And then I did so many different versions of this in different sessions. And then I finally, as your messages became more insistent, like, hey, are you really going to do this? Hey, and then I would just get other ideas. And then I had this idea, like I did this spoken word thing I don't consider myself a poet, and I don't like really, I don't speak into like, here's my thing, you know, like it was in London, like years ago, it was actually not too long ago, maybe like 7 years ago, I was in London. It was my first tour after breaking my collarbone, I think, with Dinosaur Jr. And I was sitting in a hotel room and I just read from my journals, like just read. I read 8 minutes straight right from my journals. And I had this, because I was working on the piece, I'm like, I realized I really wanted I wanted voices in it. I wanted a voice in it because like I'm tied to the voice. I'm tied to the human voice. So I thought, well, you know, after I created this bed, it's like that could have been fine. That would be it. But then I thought, I want to add something to it because I have been reading poetry lately, like other people's poetry and sort of discovering poetry late in my life now. But I just thought, well, if I can only find that piece, and I knew it was somewhere, and then I finally found it, like you were just like, I need to do this and I need it in 3 days. And then I found the fucking poem, I would say. And I was like, wow, I fucking found it. And so I then went through the process of laying it on top, then cutting the whole piece to fit the poem, but cutting a lot of the poem, like really the poem itself is like, when you talk about dark, I mean, it got really, I mean, I actually,
I love the stuff you're saying and you know, the overall vibe, because you're talking about, you know, this rolling loop. And I don't know if I'm keying into the same thing, but there's an almost synesthetic aspect to the piece that reminds me of being in the bowels of an eternally rowing slave ship.
Woo! There's an endorsement. This record is like fuck being the bowels of the eternally rowing slave ship. I love it. That is a fucking review. That's the fucking high. That's the pull quote from the review.
And just like all the guys' faces are like,
yeah. That's what it is. I mean, that's really, I mean, because the thing that I read was really like, it's, again, it's like, as the sounds are, you know, the sounds are actually like my, it's just like, you're just interjected with static and that's my last, I mean, I'm basically summing the last 40 years of my life with the sounds in that piece. And then I thought, because my journals are super unpoetic and really depressing, I was like, I just was zeroed in on this one time that I had read the fucking journal, because I don't do that generally at all. I mean, I do it a little bit, but I was like, no, I'm going to find that fucking piece. And I did it, you know, 6 years ago in that fucking hotel room in London. And I know I did it and I know I saved it and I know it's somewhere. What the fuck did I name it? So I was going through every hard drive going like, did I name it poem? Like, no. Did I name it journal? And I'm like, I finally found it. It was named Journal. Journal 1, 2, and 3. I added them all up and they fit exactly over the piece, how long that I had actually done. And I'm like, oh, now all I have to do is like take the voice and then cut it in between. And then and it'll magically be 16 minutes. And it fucking was, because it started as 8 minutes with the full journal was 8 minutes. The full piece that I had at that moment was 8 minutes. They almost perfectly matched up randomly. And then I was like, all I have to do is double the length of this by just going through and just cutting it wherever the fuck I want to cut it and doing whatever the fuck I want to do. And I'm like, wow, this is fun. And I did it. That was the last 2 days before I sent it to you. And I finished it. I was like, I woke up in the middle of the night on fucking Wednesday, I guess, or Thursday. And I was like, okay. I mean, I usually don't do this. I usually meditate, but I was like, I'm going to get up. I'm going to go to my fucking thing. And I'm going to put my headphones on. I'm not going to play it too loud. And I'm just going to cut the rest of this shit together. And I did. And then I woke up in the morning and my ears were ringing. And I was like, I must have been playing it like way louder than I had even imagined. Because I was so engrossed. I was just like so.
I'm sorry about that. I didn't realize what was going on your end. I just figured.
Well, you wouldn't. There's no reason that you would or would. It doesn't matter. It just like, it was like, I wanted to deliver. I wanted to give it to you, Dave. I was like, I want this. I want to give this to you for whatever it's worth, for whatever this is. And I mean, you know, not to be super cheesy, but like, you know, as we were talking earlier in this conversation, it's like, listening to all of that stuff and reflecting on so many little like corners of my life in the last, I mean, it's like, it made me realize how difficult shit has been. And I think just, and hearing it all summed up in one piece, I was like, wow, because I've been thinking in so many other ways that like, you know, I'm reaching a point. It's like, and I'm sure you feel the same. It's like, we're trying to just make it into the next half of our life. Hopefully. It's like,
yeah, right.
We just want to make it there. And I think because we're not our parents, and because we are this sort of generation where things have gotten better, actually, as far as like what we can manage with our health, all of the things that we have at our disposal, the things to give ourselves a little bit of longevity, because actually not even a generation or two ago, people our age would be pretty much dead by now or retired. But we're choosing not to do that. We're choosing to somehow hope that there's going to be another decade or two for us. And a lot of thinking about making that next few decades has been like, it's a time for me to take stock with what's happened, change what I need to change, and somehow move forward. But the taking stock process, it is really in that piece. And it's like, I've been kind of like crawling. I mean, I've been in this aftermath after finishing it. I didn't realize how much of an impact that actually making that piece had on me. But like the last couple of days have been like, I'm just wandering and feeling so confused by what it said, by what the piece says and what it imparts
to me, and not even necessarily literally by what you're saying from your journals, but the feeling of it is questioning the worth of even getting up in the morning. And I connect with that 100%, because every time I feel like that, what I do is I way overcompensate and I double down. So anytime I get a bad health report, I work 10 times harder. Anytime I get into a fight with my wife, I gotta make sure that my self-esteem goes through the roof by accomplishing 10 things that day. It's like, it's almost a form of self-punishment, but it's self-preservation as well. Right. And because of all the health stuff I went through, I was clean and sober for 13 and a half years. And during the point at which we started talking, I had gone off the rails because of the chronic pain, the bleeding, the this, the that. I was up in the middle of the night. I'm still struggling with that shit. So I wasn't physically addicted to anything, but I was fucked up constantly from the middle of the night till when I went to sleep. You know, just in January, I decided I need to cut the cycle. And I actually went into a detox, even though I wasn't physically addicted to anything. I would wake up at night in sweats. And then I realized the heat was on too high. And I asked them to just turn it down a little bit. But everyone else there, the girl had a seizure right in front of me. People were really, really fucked up. Not to minimize my own thing, but I just orchestrated it in such a way that I didn't get tangled. I would do opiates like 3 times a week, never on adjacent days, just to have a physiological vacation. Like right now, I'm feeling burning pain in my neck. And I typically would just take some pills just to have some fucking, you know, so hearing your, you know, and it's been like today's 70 days with nothing. And it hasn't been victorious. It's been just like your piece.
I'm in a very similar spot. I mean, it's not, I'm sorry. That sounds really, I'm not at that point, but I am definitely at a parallel. My thing's parallel, I would say. Not as intense. I think I've been very lucky in a lot of regards. So, but I do think that it's like, that's very similar. That's a very similar thing. Like where I'm just, but I spend a lot of those time. I mean, I really, for the piece I spend a lot of time awake at night. Cause I mean, I can knock myself out with Xanax like really easily. It's wonderful. It's like even at low dosage, but I'm very consciously like, I don't want dementia. I don't want this shit. It's like, they don't really know what the fuck this shit does that they give us. They don't really know.
Yeah.
And so I'm feeling like, okay, you know, it was wonderful to get me to sleep during the pandemic in the last 5 years, but...
Have you tried melatonin? I've been using that.
No, I haven't. I've never tried it. I've always figured it didn't work. I figured it was like just any of that kind of herbal shit that doesn't work and then you just mentally...
It works.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I'm using now, but I mean, you know, what I would use... You know, even when we were doing our zombies interview and stuff like in that era, I would just smoke so much weed that I had no trouble passing out. It was just, I'd wake up in the middle of the night.
Oh yeah, that's the problem. I can fall asleep. I just can't, I can't go back to sleep.
Yeah. You know, it's that second, like walking across the second half of the tightrope, that really is kind of way more so than the music element. That's what Disco Graffiti is. Mm-hmm. Most of the people who listen to the show, how old are you?
57.
You know, they're in their 50s, almost, you know, a large chunk of the populace out there listening. And they connect with that part of it is like, we're attempting to not go gentle into that good night based on what we grew up with, you know, right. Especially you with the hardcore. But, you know, that's the roiling depths of your piece. And that's how it spoke to me. And so, you know, the really quick response of it's so dark, it wasn't meant as a facile read on it.
I liked it. And then also on top of that, it's like, it was funny, my son had, he was reading a book about women in rock, I think, and he came upon Cozy Fanny Tootie, who was a member of Throbbing Gristle. And actually he and I have listened to, we had this amazing moment years ago when he was like 8 or 9 and was in a pickup truck, and I had Throbbing Gristle's Greatest Hits on the CD player, and we're listening. And as I can't remember, like adrenaline or something kicks in, we hit a snowstorm. And so we're listening to this. Throbbing, because that shit is like fucking negative, like straight up, like it's like scary. But I was fine. I was like, but my son, my young son, reintroducing me to Throbbing Gristle and then realizing, like, again, the cathartic aspect of it. So when you said dark, I'm just like, okay, I'm back, I'm home.
Yeah,
because that's kind of like, that was my means to survival, like emotional survival. I was reminded recently of my infatuation with the Swans, or Swans the band, and how dark that band is and how obsessed I was. Like, I just,
that's why I love the Sunshine Pop stuff, because it's just wish fulfillment. I'm in the same place you are, but my choice is to just like look over the fence.
Well, that's what I did when I was listening to Throbbing Gristle. I was listening to Brenda Lee. I mean, I was like one or the other. I mean, I was like, I was swinging. I mean, that's kind of the crux of, I mean, I would think of kind of where I ended up in the middle is like, I was really drawn to both. You're just drawn to it. I'm drawn to extremes, I guess.
Yeah. As Billy Joel once so gracefully said, I go to extremes. Thank God he's back in the game. It's funny. This has turned into a hell of a lot more depth than what I had intended on.
Yeah, sorry about that. But yeah, you
can. Oh, no. This is great. I mean, it's really the only thing that's going on in my life. I wake up, you know, there's this meme, you know, when you wake up every morning and remember that you're alive, and then the picture is a guy bending over and throwing up. And you know, I don't want to take away from, you know, I'm grateful for a lot of things, you know, especially my family, basically my family and the show. But, you know, living in a post-COVID society where everybody feels very distant now, even when you're in the same room with them, at least it does to me. And I can't help but get out of that mind frame that it's not that things are great. It's that it's not as bad as it's going to be right around the corner. So be grateful for it now. I just can't escape that mind frame. And I want to, I desperately do, try to reframe my thoughts every day. But your piece speaks to me on that level. And it's necessary, because just because I'm trying to escape those thoughts doesn't mean that those thoughts don't come from a very real place.
Yeah.
Really, thank you. You know, and I can hear the work that you put into it.
All right, that about does it. Stay tuned, because next up on the docket, we've got Juan's Corey Hansen. A heartfelt discography thanks goes out to my beautiful son, Mason, the incomparable Lou Barlow, Michael Dutcher, Rudy Fishman, Becky Boyd, my incredibly loyal fans, and especially the entire Patreon community, the Soldiers of Sound. I love every last one of you, and this show would not exist without you, my friends. Speaking of friends, it's high time for some new ones. They're in our Facebook group, Discography Soldiers of Sound. That's the best way to find out what's coming up on the show, but there's a hell of a lot more. You get recaps of the day in music history, the ability to pitch questions to guests, polls that put you in the driver's seat on guest and band decisions, and access to a thriving creative hub if you're looking for a collaborator. So make sure you don't miss out. You can find the link to the Discography Soldiers of Sound Facebook page right there in the show notes. And if you don't mess with the Zuck, no sweat. Just email me at info@discography.com and I'll keep you in the loop. So now that it's done and you want more, another way to dive even deeper into the four visionaries featured on the upcoming Metal Machine Muzak tribute album is to leap headfirst into Lou Barlow Rates the Zombies. That's episodes 59 and 60. Unquestionably the greatest Lou Barlow interview of all time. That's episode 62. Juan's Corey Hansen rating his band's entire discography plus his solo work. That's episodes 120 and 121. And don't miss his Patreon companion episodes. W. Cullen Hart rating the Olivia Tremor Control and the Circulatory System. That's episodes 131, 132, and 133. With substantially elongated edits in our Patreon for the Lieutenant and Major tiers, and the epic 16-hour Mark Robinson interview, which is episodes 128, 130, 135, and 136, with massively elongated companion edits on our Lieutenant and Major tiers and our Patreon as well. And of course, be sure to mark your calendars, because we're coming at you raging full on with Metal Machine Music Week. Trust me, you're not going to want to miss a single second of it. And so, from now till then, don't let our youth go to waste, lads and ladies. It's Discograffiti!
Osiris.